Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, we open our show with some national news, some highlights from those dueling town halls held by President Donald Trump and Vice President and presidential candidate Joe Biden. Then, we'll have part one of our East County Magazine Candidates Forum for the candidates running for El Cajon's District 2 City Council seat. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
The two candidates go head-to-head tonight, though not face-to-face, each in a key battleground state.
Some are still undecided, and we're going to try to take questions from as many of them as we can.
Instead of a debate, the nation saw dueling primetime town halls last night. Former Vice President Joe Biden on ABC News with George Stephanopoulos and President Donald Trump on NBC News with Savannah Guthrie. NBC's decision to schedule Trump at the same time after he bowed out of the regular debate was widely criticized. A group of 100 actors and producers, some working for NBC, called it a, quote, disservice to the American public. Earlier, the Biden team announced a few positive tests among people who'd traveled with the former vice president and Senator Kamala Harris, including the senator's communications director. Harris has canceled in-person events through Sunday. Both candidates continue to test negative. Biden, at the town hall, emphasized the importance of safety precautions.
I'm less concerned about me than the guys at the cameras, the people working in the, you know, Secret Service guys you drive up with, all those people.
In contrast, when Trump was asked if he was tested before the first debate, he was not clear on his team's testing measures before and after his positive diagnosis.
The doctor is very accurate information, and it's not only that doctor, it's many doctors.
Trump argued with his interviewer repeatedly. Asked again if he would denounce white supremacy, he did, quickly pivoting to blaming the left for all the violence. In fact, the FBI has said far-right violence is a greater threat. Trump refused to denounce QAnon, an unfounded conspiracy theory that holds Trump's fighting a secret war against a powerful and satanic ring of pedophiles led by Democrats. The president claimed little knowledge.
What I do hear about it is they are very strongly against pedophilia, and I agree with that.
Asked whether he would be willing to add justices to the Supreme Court, Biden said it depends on the rest of the confirmation process, but he will give a direct answer before Election Day.
You got to make sure you vote and vote for a senator who, in fact, thinks reflects your general view on constitutional interpretation and vote for a president who think is more in line with you.
The Judiciary Committee is on track to send Trump's nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, to the full Senate to vote the last week of October. If Barrett is quickly sworn in, she'll likely rule on election cases. Rudy Giuliani's daughter came forward to endorse Biden, as did the late televangelist Billy Graham's granddaughter, Jerusha Duford. She's with the bipartisan Not My Faith PAC.
I want the world to know personally that the Jesus we serve promotes kindness, dignity, humility, and this president doesn't represent our faith.
And strong words from Republican Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. The Washington Examiner obtained a constituent call where Sasse said the president, quote, mocks evangelicals behind closed doors, quote, flirted with white supremacists, and, quote, kisses dictators' butts. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Welcome, everybody, to our East County Magazine Candidate Forum for El Cajon City Council, District 2. I'm Miriam Raftery, and I'll be the moderator this evening. John Sepulveda, our co-host, will be the timekeeper. District 2 is the north-central portion of the city. There are six candidates on the ballot, and I'm delighted that we have five of them who are participating tonight. They are Humbert Cabrera, Martin Van Ditteren, Stephanie Harper, and Michelle Metzl, and Martin Van Ditteren. A sixth candidate, Letitia Dickerson, did not respond to our invitation. So we really want to thank our candidates for participating, the members of the public who sent in questions to us, and the Facebook Journalism Project for supporting our virtual candidate forum series during the COVID-19 pandemic, when it's really tough for the candidates to get out there. There aren't the usual in-person forums. So we're really very appreciative of everyone for helping us make this happen. John Sepulveda is our producer and co-host, and he will be our timekeeper tonight. And he will be enforcing the time limits so that we can fit in as many of the public's questions as we can. So without further ado, we would like to begin with opening statements. We would like each of you to please take a minute and a half and tell us about yourselves, your qualifications, accomplishments, and what you hope to do if you're elected. Mr. Cabrera, as the Alcohol Planning Commissioner there, and first on the top of the screen, we'll let you go first, and we're going to go in order, folks, and we'll be changing so everybody gets a chance to be first on some of the questions.
Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Miriam, for putting this together. Thank you to all the citizens that are watching. I know it takes a lot of time and effort, and I really do appreciate it. And to all of the candidates that showed up, I appreciate you being here so we can talk about the issues and maybe get something better out of El Cajon. I've been volunteering for LAPA, CASA, Community Action Service Advocacy, Rotary, ELKS, Homeless Task Force, Chamber of Commerce, the Government Affairs Committee, National Hispanic Police Officers Association, East County Business of the Year, Salvation Army, and that's why I was voted Citizen of the Year. I actually worked very hard with several different people and a lot of different citizens and a lot of different groups, and I know how government works. I'm currently a planning commissioner, and I'm ready to go. I think that some of the best things of El Cajon and East County is that people actually work together. We actually work together to get Fox Shocks and 300 jobs in El Cajon. I spent 9 years of my life helping to get the 33,000 square foot food choice food bank into Salvation Army. And we're actually doing a lot of work at Rotary and ELKS and everywhere else to help common citizens and everyday citizens with help for the homeless. And I'm on the homeless task force. And we've seen a lot of great things in El Cajon, and there's a lot more left to do. So I don't see that my minute and a half is up, but I'm going to cut it short and say welcome to everybody, and thank you for being here.
Very good. And I do want to welcome Juan Carlos Mercado, who has just joined us, our fifth candidate, who is just...
Apologize.
No problem. And Juan, do you go by Juan Carlos? So I know I saw Charlie in your bio.
Juan Carlos, you can call me Charlie. That's Charlie. My childhood nickname. So I kind of like
good.
That.
Oh, so we each have everyone has a minute and a half for the opening statements. Let's go next to Martin. We're going to just go clockwise on this to keep it easy so that we can remember this. Martin, your opening statement.
Very good. Well, hello, my name is Martin Van Dintren, and I've been a long-term resident of East County. I've lived in Lakeside, Santee, and El Cajon. I've raised my family here. I have two daughters, Tiffany and Amber, and they both graduated from Granite Hills High School. And, you know, I've worked as a B1 builder for over 40 years, and mainly in the East County. And I was also a building inspector for the city of El Cajon, building fire and safety inspector. And until just recently, some of the COVID unfortunately removed the position. There were some cutbacks, and May 28th was my last day. Unfortunately, I very much enjoyed the job. And that being said, you know, I developed many relationships with people because normally between 50 and 100 people I would see a week doing inspections. And I got to know a lot of people in El Cajon. And several of them, you know, pushed me to go ahead and do this. I've always put a lot of effort into doing more than I'm supposed to. And I love helping people. I love helping them get through their issues. And that's the main reason why I'm running. Politics isn't something that I have a lot of practice in, but I'm learning a lot at a very fast rate. But I'm really looking forward to developing those relationships even further as council member for District 2. And thank you so much for the invitation.
You're welcome. Michelle Mitchell, let's hear from you with your opening remarks.
My name is Michelle Mitchell, and I am running for El Cajon City Council, District 2. I want to give you a little background. I've lived in El Cajon since 1979. I currently work for a government contractor as a department administrator. This is my first time running for an elected position. I may be a rookie in politics, but I'm not a rookie in life. I've been around the block a few times. I work with government contracts at work. I have to interact with people from all around the world. So you have to learn to be fair in how you apply processes and procedures. My husband and I have raised our family here, and I've been involved in several activities in the city, such as the International Friendship Festival, a participating member of the El Cajon Community Cleanup Group, and homeless outreach with two churches. I attend many city council meetings and events when possible, because I do work full time. I am fiscally conservative, I'm socially moderate, and I feel that District 2 is a blue-collar worker or a blue-collar, hardworking community. Our future depends on communities working together with law enforcement and city government to keep drugs and criminals from creating havoc in our community. And our El Cajon should be a place that parents will want to live and raise their families, where students can walk home safely from school, play in their front yard, and enjoy local parks. My hope is that you will see that I bring common sense, ethics, and a desire to be the voice of this district. Some people focus on race and ethnicity, but I say that if you deal with people honestly and fairly, it doesn't matter what your gender or ethnicity is. We are all one community, and we all want a great place to live. So I ask the voters out there who are watching this to join me and help make El Cajon a place that we can be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michelle. And next, we're going to hear from Stephanie Harper.
Hi. Thank you once again, Miriam, for having me here, and thanks for everybody watching on Facebook. You know, El Cajon was once a valley of opportunity. We were called that because there was opportunity here in our valley. And as a young single mother, it was tough and there were struggles, but I was able to pay rent and I was able to pay my bills. I was able to do it all on my own without any help, but it seems like that time is long since past due. Now it seems like just kind of a city of obstacles that we all face, but some of us just have to face them in different ways. Some of us live for the day, and some of us live day to day. Some of us we got families struggling to keep their homes, and we have families struggling to find a home for the night. We have senior citizens who are on fixed incomes and on the verge of losing their place. They have to decide whether they want medication or a place to live. We've got children being raised in hotel rooms and in cars, calling the streets home. We have over 700 people homeless and with less than half of them in shelters. And El Cajon's still the poorest city in San Diego County, and I live in one of the poorest districts. But it seems pretty bleak, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There is a beacon of hope, and I'm going to be your beacon for the rest of this election. My name is Stephanie Harper, and I am running for El Cajon City Council. I'm the change my city needs to see. I go to go to as many city council meetings as I can whenever there's a time to voice my concerns. I do go up there, and I voice them very, very loudly and very proudly. I'm out there on ground floor. I'm not going to govern from the top of a building looking down where all the problems are small. I'm right there on ground floor. I go to Wells Park. I go to Cajon Park. I go to the welfare office. I'm an average person. I'm out there. I'm just like everybody else. But I have a passion for this city, and I have a passion that flows through me to be a voice to help people out. I'm a proud Democrat, and I believe that each of our districts are very, very diverse, and they need representation from people who live in those districts, and we need to keep our community together. And the only way you know something is if you walk in those shoes, and I'm walking in those shoes. So thank you for the opportunity to be up here for election. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Stephanie. And Juan Carlos, or Charlie, as you go by.
Hi, thank you for having me. As everyone here, we're all running for City Council District 2. So I want everyone to know, si hablo español, claro que sí, Juan Carlos Mercado. Los quiero mucho. And Betsy Deutsch, ich heiße Carlos, ich komme aus Mexiko. Ich frage Betsy Deutsch. So 20%. Anyways, I'm Juan Carlos Mercado at Charlie. I'm an immigrant, and I started working in the fields at the age of five. My father left me and my mother passed away at that time. And I came to the United States, at a young age, teenage years, eighth grade, and I didn't speak any English. I struggled to assimilate. So I understand with a lot of immigrants, there's a lot of immigrant population here in El Cajon, and very diverse, proudly diverse. So we connect. I joined the Army when I turned 19, still learning the language, still assimilating. I did a combat tour, two combat tours, Bosnia and Iraq. And also, I'm an alumni from San Diego State University. So a lot of the candidates, even in the other races, are from San Diego State. So kudos for San Diego State. And I'm an ROTC graduate commission, number one in my class. Very difficult to do, ASTIC cadet commander, head tactical officer. And I did a tour of combat operations as a platoon leader in Bosnia with millions of dollars of equipment, sensitive items with top secret clearance, working with embassies in France, Hungary, and all throughout the European theater. So I do have that experience. And even with all that, my number one concern was always the lives and the safety of every soldier, every one of my soldiers. Recently, I retired from the Sheriff's Department as a correctional officer, so I was not on patrol. I didn't arrest anyone. But I do have knowledge of SOPs, post requirements. So I think I have the edge in that area. And I think I can work closely with the El Cajon Police Department. And also, I became involved in community work with veteran issues. Okay, we have homeless veterans, veterans with PTSD, lacking medical care, mental health, unemployment, everything. And they're getting deported. So I did the Deported Veterans of America. I wrote the book, Faith of the Deported Veterans, so we can bring light to the deportations of soldiers.
Okay.
But closer to here, and I'll wrap this up. I've learned that the community has the same concerns, homelessness, mental health, physical health, and so that's how I became involved in politics. So I just want to, focus on that and bring that to the community of El Cajon.
Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on to our first question, and we'll give you up to 2 minutes apiece on this because it's a major issue. El Cajon, like many cities across the United States, has seen protests recently over racial justice issues and policing. I would like to ask how you would balance concerns among people who have issues over racial injustices and would like to see changes in the policing or police funding versus those who are concerned over making sure that there's adequate police protection for the community. Martin, it's your turn to go first.
Oh, terrific. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, one of the issues that I see, as a building inspector, we're trained through the police academy and we get a citation. We get a certificate for that. And that being said, there's a number of trainings that I was exposed to and I experienced. So one of the first problems that we have is with the police force and the people that are worried about what happens to them is, I believe, into training. Because if you were there, you would find it almost offensive. And the actions and the combat training, in which I went through as well. So I think it's one of the first problems that we have is because they're just reacting the way that they're supposed to, that they're being trained to. And I also think that's the level of respect that the people have to have. If you're in a position where you feel uncomfortable with the police and the law and you're in some type of action with them, compliance is by your best weapon. They're gonna push through their training what they're supposed to do, and then you have that opportunity to comply and listen. That's the reason why we have civil actions. You just go to court if you have a problem and or issue. As far as the injustice is concerned, I find that, very difficult. I went to school on the East Coast and I went to a mainly black school. I was a minority. And my innocence from here led me to success there because I didn't run. I didn't hide. I didn't stick my head in the sand. I got laughed off of tables. People took food off my plate. So, I've been on the other end. So I understand it. So my point is that if you just walk into any kind of situation take the opportunity to put yourself in their position and then act. Don't act on your thought, your desire. Think about them. And for them, just try to comply.
Thank you very much. Michelle, could we hear from you on the issue of racial justice and policing?
Thank you. I oppose defunding the police. I fully support our law enforcement officers. As a former EMT, I relied on police officers and fire department to help me with providing medical assistance to patients. If I go on scene of a stabbing, I really relied on police officers to make sure that they have my back so that I can attend to my patient and they do their job. And I encourage anyone who has condemnation for law enforcement to do a ride along, do a day ride, do a night ride, or become a police officer. They have a hard job. And as far as racial justice, we need to talk about that. To make sure that the law is applied equally and fairly. My family is multiracial, and I think that we have everybody come to our house. So I want to support the community. If there are injustices, then we look into it. But other than that, we need to get more funding into our police and add 1 to 2 officers per shift to make sure that our 103,000+ residents are equally protected, that situations are handled properly. And if there is overreaching by the police, then we look into it, and they need to be held accountable, and officers need to be allowed to report excessive force by their fellow officers.
Thank you very much. Stephanie, could we hear from you, please, on the issue of racial justice and policing public safety?
Well, Miriam, when you asked this question, the first thing was brought to mind was Alfred Alongo. And that was 4 years ago, and it popped off here in Okahone, and we all had to deal with that. I believe that our police department did handle that to the best of their ability. There was a lot of tension. I was there at the barbecues where they were there at. They took down the memorial, which I thought was kind of just obtuse, but we spent money to keep an officer watching over there to make sure that they didn't set that up again. I don't think we need to go that far. When you do your job, Miriam, you're great at your job. And if you weren't great at your job, we would know it. So police department's just the same way. When a police officer is great at their job, you'll know it. He'll be the one that handles the situation well. He'll be the one that wants to be helpful, wants to, no matter what you look like, no matter if you're black, white, red, yellow, brown, purple with diamonds, he's still gonna treat you the same way because that's his job, is upholding the law. But we have a lot of officers that don't know our laws. And when you don't know the law, you can't do your job to your best ability. And there are police officers out there that will go and search the law. They'll do the things that they need to do to do their job to the best of their ability. But our crime rate is the highest of any East County city. And the violent crime is escalating here, while property crime is going down. And one of the reasons for that is the lack of sufficient police. We've got 1.14 officers for each 1,000 citizens. That's really a heavy load on them. We have to maybe take some of that load off them, give them a perk team so they can handle people like what happened with Alfred Alongo. Or maybe we could get a citizens oversight committee so the police aren't policing themselves. Also, I think a good idea would be to open up a police academy to get our youth involved with the police department, have them do ride-alongs, have them want to be police officers again instead of wanting to be against the police, because that brings a lot of racial tension too. You hear it on the radio, you see it in the kids. We need to bring them back home. We need to bring people back into our police department and know that that person with a star on their badge is safety. The one you call first when you need protection. And I commend them for their job. But we can always do better.
Thank you. Charlie?
Yes, thank you. We definitely lack adequate public safety. The Oklahoma Police Department is not meeting the needs of the community. I think it's obvious. Too much focus on deadly force. Not enough on non-lethal force. The officers that responded to to Alfred Longo, you know, it's got that mentality of you show up and your hands on the gun already. And this event happened right across the street from my house. So I had, you know, I got to see all the events, not just what the media put out there. You know, if you investigate the officer that was involved in the shooting, he has his past is questionable, and that's putting it lightly. Okay. So let's not just say, yeah, just the job is difficult. I was a deputy and I have many friends who do the job. The bottom line is the residents of El Cajon are not happy. Increasing the budget, throwing money at training when the training itself is outdated. And I know because I attended most of the training, per training is 8 hours one day, and the follow-up training is a video online. Okay, I'm not sure that that's adequate. Another thing is, yes, most of the officers are doing their job and do it right. But when you see a bad apple and you say nothing, then you are complicit. So that needs to change. And some of the officers have a problem saying Black Lives Matter. They can't even say that. And I've seen it. I'm not talking, I'm not quoting. I've seen it. Okay. I've been to the events. I go where they socialize and I hear it firsthand. So let's put the brakes on just increasing the budget and throwing money before we know where that money's going and if the training is the best training that we have available for them. And remember, you know, the pension system for the officers is not a good one. You know, I already talked to the city manager and I told him, and he agreed with me. If we hired the services of the sheriff's department, we would be saving nearly $1 million a year. The only caveat of that is the pension system. But the sheriff's department has decreased the pensions for the deputies. So if the sheriff's department is doing the same, it looks like a very viable option.
Thank you. Humbert Cabrera, let's hear your thoughts on racial justice and policing issues in El Cajon.
Yeah, I wanted to try to kind of focus more on the second district. We have a lot of issues like Bradley Bridge and parking and all sorts of stuff there. But this is a very important issue, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I want to give kudos to Stephanie. I was there the first night that the Alfred Longo thing happened. And I was actually there talking with the citizens of El Cajon, and I was actually there participating with Miriam and with Stephanie at some of the events. Some of them we crossed our paths on, some and on some we weren't. But I like people that have attended the city council meetings and are not just showing up here to run for the second district. And I also have to say, as an El Cajon native and somebody that was born here and has lived in the second district since he was 4 years old, I don't like people that just move into the second district and want to run for the second district. The second district is a very unique area. And I think we need to start thinking about the second district instead of these kinds of ways. And I'll tell you one thing. I was endorsed by Senator Anderson, Pastor Harold Brown, Councilman Bob McClellan, Southwest Association. But I'll tell you one thing, I was not endorsed, nor am I taking money from the Good Old Boys Network. And some of us on this screen are. And I want to say that I will never take money from the Good Old Boys Network. And those people have come to me and they have said, we do not want a Latino in that seat. We do not like the fact that you hire Chaldeans. We do not like the fact that you hire people that are immigrants. All of them are legal immigrants, and we will not do business with you. And so this still exists in El Cajon. You saw what happened with the churches over the weekend, and this is a terrible thing, but this still exists.
So
I'm not going to take money from those people, so I'd like to hear other people that will not take money from the Good Old Boys Network.
Before we go
that's
on.
That's where I am. As far as the police officers go, the training is there. They have to get retrained every year. And yeah,
we're at time. I'm sorry.
I do have a quick follow-up question. A reader actually just texted, or viewer, I should say, just texted in a question for us. But the question is, we have seen clashes in several East County cities recently between some groups, you know, at some of these protests that were shouting racial slurs, and there's been some physical altercations. Some of them, you know, had white supremacist, you know, Nazi insignia and so forth. And then last night at the debate, we did hear the president refused to distance himself from white supremacy and actually goes so far as to tell the Proud Boys to stand by and stand down, perhaps referring to Election Day, a lot of people thought. So the question from the viewer is, you know, are you good with or are you concerned about the idea of groups like the Proud Boys showing up at polls on Election Day in El Cajon? Michelle, I think it's your turn to take that one first. Let's just do a minute on that.
That's a good question. I don't take my family to Alabama. And the reason why I don't take my family to Alabama is because my family back there that I never knew and never grew up with are racist. I believe racism has no place in El Cajon. As I said before, my family is multiracial.
Michelle, you're getting money from them.
Okay. This is John, the timekeeper. If this happens again, I'm going to mute. I'm sorry that we do not have a good example at the federal level, but we are not going to jump in and start yelling at each other. Michelle, I'm going to restart your clock. I want to hear about your experience in Alabama. And Mr. Cabrera, if you want to address this in your response, you're more than welcome to.
I didn't get additional time when they were interrupting me.
I'm sorry. We'll give you 10 extra seconds, 15 extra seconds on the next question, Humbert. And that's a fair enough statement. Go ahead, Michelle.
Racism has no place. And I think that anybody who thinks that it is a good thing to have Proud Boys, white supremacists, is not good. I'm shocked. I've been accused of something that I didn't do. If you were at my home at any time growing up, I've had families living with us from all walks of life. People who needed help, they'd come to my house and you would get the shirt off my back if you needed it. You've got a place to live, bring your children. I am Nana to half of the kids at 40 years old because they grew up with my daughter who is half Hispanic. And for someone to accuse me of taking money is unconscionable and you don't know me. And I will denounce any white power being at the polls. Thank you.
Okay. And Stephanie, your thoughts on that?
As far as racism goes, I wouldn't, I'm going to go walking into my polls. I don't have a problem with that. It doesn't matter who's standing in front of me. I'm just going to walk right around them because the only person I'm racist against are racist people. And there is racism here in El Cajon. We would like to pretend that it doesn't happen, or we could say there's no place for it, but there is, because there's jerks in all shapes and sizes. They come in all creeds. I've got just about every kind of type of different ethnic background in my family. My son's half Arabic. My mother's is half Spanish. My dad's German. I've got nieces and nephews are African American. So I've got it all. So I don't believe that there's no racism, because there is, because people, or just people that don't understand it. But with me, that's not how I am. As far as somebody trying to keep me from going to the polls or trying to stop me from going to the polls, that's my right. That's my freedom. And I carry my vote and that freedom very dear to my heart, just like I do my flag.
Thank you very much. And Charlie, your thoughts on the statements about the Proud Boys and so forth?
Obviously, zero tolerance. If anything, we need to have police presence there to make sure that everybody gets access to the ballots, to the voting booths, because no, zero tolerance for hate crime, zero tolerance for discrimination, for racism. I mean, I've been a victim of, racism throughout my life. And even within the sheriff's department, I was told, go back to Mexico. So I have zero tolerance for that. And there's many samples in El Cajon where, again, Alfred Alongo, Black Lives Matter rallies, instigators and counter protesters, make their presence known. And we should not tolerate that. Not just in El Cajon, but anywhere in the United States of America or any part of the world.
Okay, thank you. Humbert, what are your thoughts about these concerns about the potential for racial intimidation at the polls?
I've had racial intimidation discrimination done to me myself, but I'll tell you what, you just work harder. You're an immigrant, you work harder. That's what my parents, they were both immigrants. They came from Mexico legally. They raised us. We all became valedictorians. We all became, I graduated 2 years early. I was in college at 15. My other brother's a doctor. My other brother's, my sister's a scientist. It is just, you do two or three times more than they did. When they came to me and said this kind of stuff, I said, you know what? I'm going to make my business even better. And I'm going to help more people. And I'm going to help more immigrants. And I'm going to hire them. And you do what you're supposed to do. You don't just talk about doing it. You actually do it. And you help. I've helped the Chaldean community immensely. But I do also, I don't see color. I actually see people trying to get the American opportunity, especially in the second district that I walk. However, in the second district, there is a big concern that most of the houses that I walked through since I was in the fifth grade for different politicians and helping different for different programs, everybody's always concerned about the good old boys network in El Cajon. And yes, it does exist. And yes, it is strong. And yes, it does feed a lot of politicians a lot of money. And so I am very concerned about that. And I'm hoping that we can kind of break that chain. And instead of having one of the greatest things that I have in my platform is a citizen-centered government. I think we need a return to citizen-centered government. I know that I've worked with Martin on some cases and some other things. And these are the kinds of things where we can work together and talk about different ways to help different people. But having this top-centric government that's run by only two or three people because they give a lot of donations to people, that's not the way it should work. And also, somebody nods in the background and says, you know, this is how you should vote, this is how you shouldn't vote. That's not the way it should work. It should work actually come from the citizens. And you know what? I have to give kudos to I hate to do this, but I do have to give kudos to Stephanie because during the Alfred Alongo thing, you were very outspoken about the police and the things that they did. I, on the other hand, actually give a little bit more leeway to the police. I actually work with them. I know that they've actually, I've had endorsements from several of them in the past. And I actually enjoy talking to police chiefs. They're actually very, 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 the last couple of them have been minorities and they're actually very, very good people. I think I have 15 seconds left, or is that?
Oh, no. We are well past time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Humbert. Martin, let's have your views on this issue.
As far as the voting rights are concerned and intimidation, I find that highly offensive. I don't like the idea of being pushed in one way or another. When I was getting my validation to be on the ballot, I ran into several people, and it was actually sad. I would walk up to someone and ask them to vote for me. One person would simply say, "Are you a Republican or a Democrat?" Well, I replied, "A Republican." He said, "I'll sign." Sad that he never asked me about any issues, what I stood for, what I wanted to accomplish, how I wanted to help. Just simply put, this is it. It's so polarized, it's scary. And I think that people, they should really read more. You know, like on my website, it breaks down, shows everything that I believe in and that I want to do. And if someone wants to believe in me, well, then perhaps they should read that and then find out. And that's why I agree with Humbert. You know, there's some issues there, and that's sad. You know, a lot of my money came from Chaldeans. One came from, he owns the Best Western Hotel. And I got the majority of my money from him. And he's an Indian. So, you know, I truly believe in diversity. I truly believe in being fair. And I don't believe in intimidation in any way. This is a contest between the six of us, and let the best person win based off of what we talked about tonight and in other events. So that's what I think about that.
Thank you very much. Next question, we'll do in a minute here, a minute round, but I think it's important since we're running in by districts now in El Cajon, which is something relatively new, to ask each of you how long you've lived in District 2 and if you have any specific priorities for your section of the city that you would be representing if you win. Stephanie, you're first on this one.
Okay. Well, I've lived in El Cajon basically my entire life. I've lived right on the outskirts. I lived in District 2 when I lived over on Madison, but I live in District 2 in this, the place that I live in now, for almost not quite a year. And out my back window, I can see all the stuff that happens downtown. There is street races that go on, and they are just awful noise pollution. They set up alarms and scare the kids, and people are, you know, it's really bad. We have a lot of the street racing, and I don't think of a lot of our police officers are aware of that, or maybe they could set up something to help that out. That's what I'm seeing when I look out my window. But when I'm walking down the street, I see a lot of I see our homeless people, which I know a lot of them, that are struggling. I see a lot of things that we could be doing and that I would want to change, like the trash on my street. We need to start having a regular street cleaning and just kind of clean up District 2 a little bit. Thank you.
Charlie, your thoughts on, or tell us about how long you've lived in the district and what specific issue or issues you think are most important in this District 2.
Okay, well, I lived specifically in El Cajon 6 years in San Diego, pretty much during the, you know, outside of the time I was in the Army, you know, and once I got here, immigrated here, then I've been in San Diego my whole life. But, you know, if you're in San Diego, you're I have family in Imperial County. So I was in and out, even when I didn't live here, out of El Cajon, pretty much my whole life. So I think we all going to agree on this. I've been out there almost daily on the streets talking to people, and everyone, and 1, 2, and 3, clean up the city, make it look better, pick up the trash, make sure the streets are right, the potholes, the lights work, stop signs, homelessness, and then public safety. Almost everyone, that's where their, I don't want to say frustration, but their concern is.
And Charlie, you've been in the district for how long? I know you said 6 years in El Cajon, but how long?
Five, 6 years, I think. 2015, I think I got here.
All right, very good. Thank you. And Humbert, how long have you lived in the district, and what would your priorities be specifically for District 2?
I want to speak about actually living and having a home in the district and not just a business in the district. I've lived in the district since I was 4 years old. And I actually have lived in El Cajon my entire life and was born and am an El Cajon native. I have seen things since FedMart, GEMCO, and the highlight of what was going on in Parkway Plaza back in the day. And when El Cajon was a star, people used to say, "What am I going to build something?" Well, of course I'm going to do it in El Cajon. We need to get back to that. We need to clean up our streets. We need to have a more less regulation and more freedom, more opportunity, and start getting the people to actually spend their money here in El Cajon as opposed to going all the way to Fashion Valley and this kind of thing. I have the ideas. I've done it. I think we're ready to go for these things. I'll have to say the second district, though, I think everybody's kind of missing the boat here because I've actually lived there. And I'll tell you, most of the people are concerned about the Bradley Bridge and the Bradley Connection. They're worried about their parking situation in the apartment buildings. They're worried about SROs and what's happening with single residence occupancies. They're worried about having adequate parking in front of their and having the waste management thing change to EDCO. They're worried about jobs, security. And I'll tell you one other thing they're worried about. I got a ton of calls at my office from people during COVID, and guess who was out there? Code enforcement was out there. The first 3 weeks of COVID, I got dozens of calls, and code enforcement was out there saying, "You know what? You have to tear down this fence or move it over 6 inches, or else we're going to fine you $1,200 a day." During COVID, when a wife and a mother and I have to hear them crying on the phone because their husband has lost their job and they've lost their job. And I just think that's not the way government should work. You have people that have to have tents and code enforcement's out there saying you have to have it.
We're at time, but we're going to be asking about homelessness in the next question. So, okay, so we'll have more on that one. Martin, tell us how long you've been in the district and what your priorities would be for it.
Well, I've been in the district. I've been in El Cajon for 20 years. I've been in District 2 for just a little bit over a year. That's where I'm at right now. And, as far as my priorities are concerned, I have many concerns with the building department's zoning, the cost of zoning. One of the things that I want to talk about and deal with is that As far as zoning is concerned, I want to eliminate the fees. I don't think it's fair to a person. I think it's a privilege for the city to have a businessman come into the city, want to redevelop, change, or rezone an area, and then be charged for it. Yeah, and then, unfortunately, if there's an issue and or problem, well, then they your money's taken for the processing, and then you wind up with nothing. I know the owner of Lulu's Market. He owns a building next door. It's been vacant for a year. He's trying to make it into a distribution center. Can't do it because it's not zoned for it. It's zoned for a grocery store distribution, you know? So I think there's some difficulties there that I would like to address. And that would be the start of it for me with the city, at least, and then permitting fees. I don't like the way that people are treated, and I don't like the time delays. And I think there needs some, I think they need some work. They need to get some ideas on how they can streamline a few things.
Okay. I'm hearing some feedback. I'm not sure who's that's from, but
somebody coughing.
Okay, in the background maybe or something. Yeah. Michelle, I think we'll let you wrap this one up. How long have you lived in District 2, and what would your top priorities be for this district?
Thank you. I've lived in my house currently for 20 years as of this last July. I've lived in within a 3-mile radius since 1979. And the top three priorities for District 2 is public safety, homelessness, and crime.
Okay, thank you very much. That was concise. We appreciate that. Let's move on to talk about homelessness. We'll give you up to 2 minutes because this is a very meaty issue, important issue to a lot of people. The city of El Cajon has spent more money trying to address homelessness and help the homeless than any of the other cities in East County, and yet it still has a very high number of homeless compared to other East County areas. So I would like to know from each of you, what is your approach to try to help the homeless and at the same time protect residents and businesses from, you know, issues involved with the homelessness, such as sanitation concerns and homeless camps on properties? And also, I'm combining a couple questions here. We've also had a couple of readers who want to know if you would support, while the East County Transitional Living Center does a good job, it is the longer term part of its program is faith-based. Do you think the city should look to support some kind of a long-term program that is not faith-based and that would be open to everybody? Charlie, you're first.
Thank you. Yes, I think the current system we have set up, current protocols that we have set up for homelessness is the bare minimum. I think it needs to be more proactive. It's not enough. You need to be out there. Okay, me, you know, I talked to the business owners and they said no one has approached them about what to do or how they can participate or what their opinion is on the homeless situation. Same thing. The churchgoers, they're like, you know, we don't know. We don't know what's being done with the homelessness, you know. And again, I'm out there in the streets almost daily, and I see that it creates an impact for the city, you know. It's a concern not just for the livelihood of the homelessness, but also the image. And now with it highlights with the COVID-19, the streets are dirty. The sidewalks are dirty. And I just don't see why a more proactive effort to make sure those sidewalks are sanitized clean somehow. You know, they did that downtown with hepatitis C. Well, why aren't they doing that now with COVID and with, you know, address the areas where the homeless congregate? But what we're doing now is just checking the block. It needs to be done more, house them, provide them what they need so that they can get out of that hole, make, you know, that's, they just want a little step up, some a jump start, so they can become functional members of society. And that's when I meet with them, that's what they want. They don't want a handout or a hand-me-down. They want a hand up.
Thank you. Humbert, how would you address the homelessness issue?
This is a serious issue, and I just wanted, I'm glad you're giving us a little additional time.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I would say, I think our producer, by the way, will add to this, but our producer was saying we want to be sure everybody feels it was fair since there were a couple of questions where people got shorted. So I think I'm going to say that we'll give each person an extra 30 seconds or so that they can use on either this question or a question of their choice. If you want to reserve your time and use more later on something that you feel passionately about. Or a closing statement, then we'll do that.
That's fair enough. I did want to say I like Stephanie Harper's cat in the background. Maybe I'll use a few seconds for that. But this is a serious issue, and I want to try to get straight to it. You asked me, what would I do? I'll tell you, I've already done it. I've worked with the Homeless Task Force for a few years now, and actually was one of the members that was in its inception. So we have over 20 some odd different non-for-profit organizations helping the homeless, depending on if they're a veteran or mental incapacities or drugs or this kind of thing. And then we have also over 60 different businesses that are helping with different facilities and money and everything else. And I actually helped to build the 33,000 square foot Salvation Army building that is a food choice food bank that's open 6 out of 7 days a week, because there was a need there. And I volunteered and I spent 9 years of my life making that happen. I also worked to try to get jobs in El Cajon, which resulted in over 300 jobs from Fox Shocks. I've actually helped to try to streamline some of the permitting process. I wish we could do a lot more, and I agree with Martin on that. As for the homelessness goes, well, I also worked on a program that has reunified over 55 families just this year for the Salvation Army. So what we do is we actually contact them more than 6 times, find out who they are, find out if their families are somewhere else in the country. Their families usually are looking for them. We send somebody on a bus. We pay for their ticket, and we also send a Salvation Army person with them. They have Salvation Armies over there. They actually help them find a job, housing, and actually get them relocated back with their families, who are very happy, and we work to relocate them, reunify them, actually. And that's actually been very successful. But there is still a lot of work to do. There's a lot of more things that we can do. There's a lot of things that we still are working on. And I think part of the thing, one of the questions was, what can we do that's not? I am endorsed by Harold Brown, which is the East County Transitionalist Living Center. They are building extra facilities there. We're trying to do the best that we can there. But I'll tell you one other thing is that the SROs, I've been trying to be a proponent of SROs for a long time. We just had 300 new SROs on East Elko Boulevard and also on East Main Street. We had another 200 SROs, which are single resident occupancies that help people with transitional housing. So there's much to do. And I think a big part of it also is zoning. We have to have administrative zoning and creative zoning to help these people. And now we have to stop drawing the magnet here, and we have to continue helping them. So there's a lot of good ideas, a lot of great stuff we're doing. So,
okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Martin, let's hear from you on how you would address the homeless situation.
Okay, well, interestingly enough, I do have a plan, and it's completely different. And basically what it does is it takes the monies that you would save, for instance, in your home, so your property taxes. You would get a tax property credit for bringing a person into your home. Mm-hmm. For that to happen, we would need vetting. We would have to have police control. There would be Zoom meetings with a potential person. So obviously there are people that are beyond help. I'm sorry to say that mentally they're going to need more help than a home could provide. But that being said, can you imagine the opportunity for someone through vetting? You meet, you're brought into a home, an ADU, whatever it may be, and then you're a part of their life. And then there's training, computer training, and you can get yourself back into a participant in society. And then the person that owns the home, rather than the government taking the money and spending it in different ways that they think would be beneficial, now all of a sudden it's going to the homeowner. That person gets a tax credit. That government goes to them, and they're the ones that can really help out, and they need the help. Because I'm sure, as you, many people, taxes are about $5,000 a year. It's an awful lot of money. Should be nice to get some of it back, helping somebody.
Okay, thank you. Michelle, how would you address homelessness?
Thank you. I have a different perspective. I was a teenager, 1972. I was in 8th grade. We were homeless. My mother made some bad choices. We lived in a motel, and then we lived in a car. I know the embarrassment of having to wear the same clothes, the embarrassment of having to take showers at school. So I have a heart for the homeless and trying to make their lives better. As an EMT, I interacted with homeless all the time and tried to give them the compassion and the civility that they need. As an adult, I've had homeless live with us for a time if they needed it. I've helped out. As a member of the Oklahoma Community Cleanup Group, I've cleaned up after homeless camps. I've seen what they've left over. There are a couple of homeless people in town that I have taken an active interest in and have helped with them. My plan is that we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We have a lot of programs out there, but what we do need is one location so that we have housing, we have training, we have clothing, medical assistance, mental health assistance, drug and rehab assistance, everything in a sort of a one-stop shop. We need to just find the location to do that and make it happen. I've worked for HomeStart, who has homeless programs, and everybody has great ideas, everybody has great programs, but let's work together and put them all in one location. Thank you.
That concludes part one of our El Cajon District 2 candidate forum. Unfortunately, Stephanie Harper did lose her connection and was not able to answer the homelessness question, but has said in her candidate statement that she sent to us that helping the homeless is a top priority for her campaign, including trying to save or bring back Crisis House. We will be airing part two of this candidate forum on our Monday show, and you can find video of the complete forum and information on all of the candidates in this race at eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
The California Republican Party has been caught putting up illegal boxes labeled official ballot drop-off box across Southern California, the Washington Post reports. Putting up or advertising unauthorized ballot drop-off boxes is actually a felony crime punishable by up to 4 years in prison. These illegal boxes have popped up at locations ranging from churches to gas stations. Now, San Diego County Registrar of Voters Michael Vu told me today by phone when asked about unauthorized ballot drop-off boxes, we have not heard of any in our county. You can find official ballot drop-off locations in San Diego County at sdvote.com. Just click on the elections information on the right side of the homepage. Only those official boxes are considered secure, according to election officials. Now, if you want contactless drop-off, you can opt for a drive-up drop-off box right in front of the San Diego Registrar of Voters office. And if you prefer to vote in person, you can do that, too, from October 31st through November 3rd, 4 days this year. There are fewer locations than in the past, with super polling locations that may have longer lines, so make sure you allow some extra time if you do vote in person. The polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., You can also find your polling place at sdvote.com. Now, every California voter has been sent a mail-in ballot this year due to COVID-19. If you decide to mail in your ballot, do so early to allow for any delays in the mail. The very last day to postmark your mail-in ballot is Election Day, November 3rd, and it must be received no later than November 6th. San Diego's Registrar of Voters has set up Track My Ballot so you can make sure your ballot was received and counted. And if you're not yet registered to vote, you can still do that, registering up through October 20th at the Registrar of Voters website, which is sdvote.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producers, John Sepulveda and Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.